This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, the 6th of February, 2015. Hello and a very warm welcome to Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 6th of February 2015, which this week has been edited by Barbara Chase. I am Peter Lydiard, your presenter for today, standing in for your usual presenter, John Parker. Now we have a special guest reader today. I'm delighted that the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Eileen Berry, has kindly agreed to join us as an additional reader. So welcome, Madam Mayor. And having dispensed with those formalities, I understand that you are happy to be referred to from now on as Eileen.
Most certainly. Thank you for inviting me.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for coming. Our other readers today are Margot Meredith.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
And Ros Lydiard.
Hello.
If you'd like to skip to any particular item on the recording, you can press the forward button on the top of your Sapphire player to move on to the next track. Now, the main headlines from the Hampshire Chronicle for this week are the Winchester earthquake, care housing on Chesil Street car park, and chickens culled on bird flu farm. So, Margot, could you start us off, please, with the earthquake story?
The ground shook around Winchester last week as an earthquake measuring 2.9 on the Richter scale struck. Ali Kefford gauges residents' reactions to the rumble. It's usually a pretty quiet place, with surrounding green fields, a farm shop and watercress beds, albeit in earshot of the rumbling traffic on the nearby A34. But at 6:30 p.m. last Tuesday evening, there was a different kind of rumbling when Headbourne Worthy, just a few miles north of Winchester, became the epicentre of an earthquake and was fleetingly bounced onto the national news agenda. 3 kilometres below the village, there was, in overall earth terms, a subtle shift in the bedrock. But this translated into a quake, measuring 2.9 on the Richter scale, with a tremor which lasted for around 5 seconds and sounded like an explosion. The effects rippled out through surrounding villages, such as Kingsworthy and South Wanston, and were felt by residents within a radius of 10 kilometres of the hamlet, although there were reports of it being felt as far away as Bournemouth. Headbourne Worthy resident Sarah Roberts thought she just lost part of her Down Farm Lane home. "It was like a big, long rumble which swept through the house," she said. "If I had walked into the kitchen and found a wall missing, I don't think I would have been surprised. One of my sons was leaning against a wall in his room at the time and came running downstairs. The other was singing in the shower and didn't notice a thing." Mrs. Roberts thought it a little surreal for Headbourne Worthy to be subjected to major flooding last winter and an earthquake the next. She may have a point. Ellie Jones, aged 18, the assistant manager of the Good Life Farm Shop, was also a bit thrown. "I was in South Wanston at the time. It was really unexpected, and there was just a grumbling. The ceiling shook, and there was a loud bang. Everyone was looking and trying to find out what had happened. We didn't expect it at all. It was very sudden. It's very strange for something like that to happen around here."
British Geological Survey seismologist David Galloway, with decades of experience tracking Britain's grumbling foundations, knows all about Winchester's first ever recorded earthquake. He explained how we live on a dynamic planet covered by 9 major plates of rock, which constantly move at about the same rate as our fingernails grow. This means that we're moving away from the United States at a rate of about 5 centimetres a year. Who knew? Whenever these plates bash into and slide past each other, the stress ripples out across thousands of miles of rock. So although we sit in the middle of the Eurasian plate, which straddles Europe and Asia, the effects of this jostling still regularly affect us, filtered down through thousands of fault lines that crisscross the country. Around 200 earthquakes a year occur below the UK, but most go unnoticed because no one but the British Geological Survey's intricate instruments register them. Mr. Galloway said, Winchester's was quite a big earthquake for Britain, and he confesses to have never experienced one himself. He said, we received reports that people were quite alarmed by it. He explained how the accompanying explosion sound was akin to the noise made by clapping hands. It's the same thing. It's the friction.
The biggest ever recorded tremor to affect Britain took place in the seas off East Anglia in 1931, registering 6.1. It caused structural damage, including collapsing chimneys in coastal towns. Most of the country also felt the one central on the Lenna Peninsula in 1984, which measured 5.4. Hampshire's largest earthquake was registered at 3.0. It occurred on July the 19th, 1982, and had an epicentre near Basingstoke. So will we get one again soon? There could be one tomorrow, or there might be one in another 100 years, said Mr. Galloway. If I was to have a bet, I'd say that within the next 10 years, there might be another one measuring around about 2.5, 2.6 in the area. While Hampshire appears thrilled to have a former Daily Mirror editor, Piers Morgan, now living in Earthquake Central, Los Angeles, was unimpressed. When the BBC newsreader Sophie Wentworth tweeted the news, his reply was, "That's just a rumble, not a quake. Try living here."
And the Hampshire Chronicle took to the streets with their reporter to speak to locals about the earthquake. And there are four comments from people here. First is from Martin Bond, who's 48, unemployed of Harwood Place, Kingsworthy. He said, "It felt like the house was coming down or something had hit the house. I got up and looked around to check if someone was there. It was a bit weird." Tom Nalbat, 43, the owner of Springvale Stores in Fraser Road, Kingsworthy, said, "Everything was rattling. I was just lying on the sofa and I heard this rattling noise and I thought it was some sort of explosion. Then I came outside to check and then I thought, well, it must have been an earthquake because I felt something similar when I was back in India 20 years ago." Thelma Page, 80, retired of Fraser Road, Kingsworthy, said, "I thought someone was playing outside because I could hear the door rattling. The dog got up and started barking for around 3 or 4 seconds. I didn't even think it had been an earthquake. My son in Littleton felt it too." And finally, Sophie White, 25, a retail worker of Wesley Road, said, "I was stood in the bathroom and suddenly there was a big bang. I just thought it was my son jumping on the bed or pictures falling off the wall. It wasn't until I looked on Facebook that I realised that it was a mini earthquake. It happened quickly, but it was weird because it was not expected."
Well, that's the item about the earthquake. And Margot, give us the item, please, about the building on the Chesil Street car park.
D-Day for controversial scheme to house the elderly. Crunch time is looming for a controversial £10 million development for the elderly on a city car park. Planners are set to decide the future of the proposal for extra care homes on the 81-space Chesil Street open-air car park in Winchester today. The City Council and County Councils are uniting to back the scheme for 52 flats. But locals say the housing, at up to 5 stories high, would overpower a street containing medieval and Georgian buildings. They believe it is also in the wrong place, with the elderly residents having to negotiate busy Chesil Street to get into the city centre. Dozens of local people gathered at the car park on Sunday to show their opposition to the scheme. Around 80 objections have been sent to the City Council, as well as a 176 signature petition. There have been 6 letters of support. But planning officers are recommending that the scheme be approved when the planning committee meets this week. Susie Wilmot of East Hill Highcliffe said, "This scheme contravenes so many of the council's own policies. It will damage the local area and local trade and have a genuine impact on people's lives. A private developer wouldn't stand a chance of getting this scheme through." Liz Cooper of the St. Giles Hill Residents Association said, "The council needs to listen to people's concerns. The response to the public consultation showed resounding objections." Another opponent has been the East Winchester Social Club on Chesil Street. Club steward Joyce Norris said, "We would lose trade without that car park." Fears were raised by former Mayor Sue Nelms last month that the scheme would become a ghetto if disabled elderly cannot get over the Eastgate Bridge. Council officers point out that the next-door Chesil multi-storey car park is rarely full and is close to other car parks. The City Council argues that the sharp rise in the number of elderly people makes such schemes vital. The number of people aged over 85 has gone up by a quarter since 2001. Extra care housing consists of groups of individual houses or flats with communal facilities that allow residents to keep their independence while having access to 24-hour care. The Chesil Street plans were among complaints expressed by the 1,000-plus people who took part in the Winchester March last November. There are also concerns that development of car parks at Friarsgate, Cattle Market and Chesil Street will hit motorists.
Thank you, Margot. And the last headline story John will read, which will be about the bird flu outbreak.
Yes, it is. The headline is "Chickens Culled at Bird Flu Farm." 10,000 chickens were due to be killed yesterday as environment chiefs tackled Hampshire's first outbreak of bird flu. The cull follows confirmation from the Department for Environment, Food and Rural Affairs, DEFRA, that the disease has been found at an Upham farm used by a broiler breeding company. A 1 kilometre exclusion zone was set up around Bigpath Farm, only the second place where bird flu has been confirmed in the UK since 2008. On Tuesday, it was revealed that 3 people, including a DEFRA official, had to undergo medical tests after showing signs of the illness, but the tests came back negative. Mackenzie Brothers Limited, which operates the site, said that the farm was fully cooperating with DEFRA. A spokesman said, "Immediately after hens exhibited symptoms, a loss of appetite together with a drop in egg production, a vet was called in and testing began. Recently, contained highly pathogenic avian influenza outbreaks in Yorkshire, and also those on mainland Europe, are believed to have been caused by migratory wild birds. Epidemiological investigations into the source of this outbreak are taking place, and the farm is fully cooperating with DEFRA. As a precautionary measure, product from the farm has already been removed from the food supply chain, and we are now awaiting further instructions from DEFRA."
Thank you, John. Well, a quick rundown of what follows. We start with the death notices, then we have Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, your say, question and answer, historical items, Chronicle comment, Jonah Lewis's column, Belgarum, what's on, and lighting up times. So we go on with the death notices. Carpenter, Susan Elizabeth Carpenter, peacefully, 26th of January, aged 68.
Dell, Roy Dell, passed away in Largs, Scotland, 15th of January, aged 70.
Fulton, Lawrence Fulton, known as Laurie, peacefully, 23rd of January, aged 63.
Goulet, James Goulet, known as Robin, peacefully on the 25th of January, age 74.
Hawkins, Hilary Ann Hawkins, known as Jill, peacefully on the 26th of January, aged 89.
Lacey, Joan Marion Lacey, peacefully, 28th of January, aged 98.
Shepherd, Beryl Shepherd, peacefully after a long illness, 24th of January.
Stannard, Faye Stannard, peacefully, 28th of January, aged 82.
Weeks, Michael John Weeks, known as Wimpy, formerly of Mitchell Deliver and Sutton Scotney, sadly passed away, 14th of January, age 58.
Thank you. We now have letters to the editor. It's a bit of a mixed bag this week. Some of them are a bit political, so we have spared the mayor's blushes by not giving her any of those to read. So, Margot, could we please have the first letter? Thank you.
Danny Hable writes on freedom of worship, a basic human right. Sir, Mary Gray, in her Christian comment of Chronicle, January the 29th, is quite right to highlight the plight of Christians living in a less fortunate position in the Middle East. She and I discussed this a couple of weeks ago at a meeting for prayer for the Middle East held at St. Peter's Church in Jury Street. Freedom of worship is a basic human right that is denied to many millions of people in this fast-changing world, and more should be done to protect minorities' rights to express themselves and maintain their traditions. Huge numbers of Christians are leaving the Middle East and North Africa because of persecution and discrimination. The only country in that vast region with a growing Christian population is Israel. Since the state was founded in 1948, the Christian population has more than doubled. Its positive approach has enabled Israel to prosper. Mrs. Gray quotes the Archbishop of Galilee, "Do not take sides, so you are unable to see the story of the other side." This is so important. We should put pressure on every country to respect their minorities whose diverse skills bring advantage to the host country. Trying to force the ideas of the majority onto everybody else does not benefit anybody, least of all the majority population, if it is preoccupied with suppressing others in its efforts to strengthen its own position. Danny Hable, Beer Close, Week.
B.P. Reynolds asks, is it worth it for just 25 years? Sir, it is interesting that the approved solar farm on Broadlands is only going to be there for 25 years, after which it appears the land will be returned to its natural state. I presume this means that after soaking the energy payers through their electricity bills for 25 years, the actual scheme will be unprofitable as a standalone operation. Another fine mess Mr. Miliband and his cohorts have got us into. B.P. Reynolds, Hursley Road, Chandler's Ford.
Thanks for putting a charity in the spotlight. Sir, as a small charity, it is all too easy to be overlooked, so that the PSP associations were really touched by being one of the chosen charities supported by Waitrose Community Matters Initiative. PSP, Progressive Super Nuclear Palsy, is a little known terminal degenerative brain disease. The support group, which I run once a month in Hampshire, is an opportunity for those people affected by the illness to come together and share advice and help reduce their feelings of isolation. In addition, our aim is to raise awareness of PSP, and by being selected by schemes such as those run by Waitrose, we are slowly achieving this. It is very reassuring and heartwarming for us all at the PSP Association that a big name on the high street recognises and likes of our charity. I was delighted to be handed our green tokens check from Charlotte Tower, manager at Waitrose in Wick. And I want to take this opportunity to say a big thank you to you, to them, and to everyone who popped their tokens in our container during the month of November. Louise Robert West, Wherewell.
Catherine Bearder writes about International Action Way to Cut Pollution. Oh, sorry, excuse me. Air pollution now causes an estimated 29,000 deaths in the UK a year, almost as many as smoking. Here in Winchester, we have seen some of the highest levels of pollution in the UK, which have repeatedly been found to be in breach of EU health limits. Local authorities have had an action plan to reduce pollution, but to really improve the quality of the air people breathe, we also need international action. Pollution levels at any given time are only partly made up of what is being emitted locally. Many of the most harmful pollutants originate from elsewhere in the country or the continent. That is why I am fighting for stricter, clearer national pollution limits so governments across Europe can act to clean up our air. This week, the EU confirmed it will go ahead with a new air quality law following pressure from MEPs and campaigners. Yet this was with no thanks to Conservative MPs, South East examples Daniel Hannan, Richard Ashworth, who voted against Lib Dem calls to keep this vital legislation on the table. Unfortunately, it seems many Tories can't see the difference between cutting red tape and cutting life expectancy. It's time for them to face up to the fact that the only way to tackle this silent killer and improve air quality is through EU-wide action. And that was Catherine Bearder, Liberal Democrat MEP for the South of England.
Richard Grant says, don't write off the Lib Dems' chances. Sir, we have George Osborne rushing around the country telling us how he will spend our taxpayers' money if the Conservatives form the next government. And yet we are still massively in debt. David Cameron making out that since he became Prime Minister, all is going well. And yet he forgets he would not be in such a position without the backing of Nick Clegg and the Liberal Democrats. Ed Miliband is being branded as hopeless and unelectable, and yet it was his own supporters and members who appointed him as their leader. Nigel Farage and UKIP, as expected, are falling apart, with Douglas Carswell saying that our British overseas aid should not be used to help those who are dying in other countries. They must be the most uncharitable party ever. The Greens have policies which could never afford. Caroline Lucas and Natalie Bennett are not singing from the same song sheet, from which what I can tell. In the meantime, the Liberal Democrats get the blame for just about everything, and yet they are probably the most sensible and realistic political party we have. They have introduced a better outlook for Britain and our people. Don't let them be written off. Richard Grant, Bithdon Close, Burley.
Silver Hill questions need answering, says David Selby. Sir, so Winchester City Council bowed down before the Silver Hill developers when they said they could not make enough profit if they included affordable housing in their scheme. Along with other developers, they have invoked an opaque part of the planning system known as the financial viability test, which has enabled them to evade building affordable accommodation, thus causing many local authorities to miss their affordable housing targets. How does this stand up when it is forecast that developers will make pre-tax profits of £2.1 billion in 2014, an increase of 34% on last year? The Bureau of Investigative Journalism has found that A, the developers mostly refuse to disclose the figures on which their assessments are based. B, councils rarely get experts to scrutinise the figures on which the financial viability submissions are made. And C, sales projections used in viability assessments are frozen when planning consent is given, so councils aren't able to share in the benefit of rising house prices. Will Winchester City Council therefore respond transparently to the three issues raised above, and will it also state clearly what financial contribution Henderson has made under Section 106, which is intended to make a contribution to the infrastructure, such as the building of a bus station? We await your reply with interest. David Selby, West Hill Road North, South Wanston.
Community spirit comes to the fore. Sir, we would like to express our sincere thanks to the fact that there is amazing care in the community in Kingsworthy. When I was taken very ill on November the 25th until the first week of January, my 86-year-old husband Howard was also unwell. Dear friends, some with a wicked sense of humour from in and around the village, Eric Norby and his paramedic staff, the rapid response paramedics, an ambulance crew, and our PG surgery at St Paul's supported our wonderful son and his two boys from Reading to help look after us on a daily basis. Even prayers were said from our Tuesday Place Club, which brought us much comfort. Knowing so many people cared what was happening to us, we just couldn't believe the care and kindness that were all willing to give of their time to ourselves and to our expertise and to our expertise. This is what makes Kingsworthy a very special place to live, knowing that people like to pull together when someone is in real need. We will never be able to thank you enough, and may our God always be there for you if ever you need help. Thank you all from the bottom of our hearts. Shirley and Howard Webb, Boyne Rise, Kingsworthy.
This letter is from Phil Yates, who's local historian and lately retired archivist and historian to the Winchester Theatre Royal. He says, overwhelmed, but it just wasn't me. Sir, may I, through your columns, thank everyone who sent me good wishes on my retirement from the Theatre Royal last month. I was quite overwhelmed by the tributes paid to me, but as I said in my short speech, that I was only a small cog in a big wheel. There were others, and they will know who they were, that did far more work to help save the theatre 40 years ago. Somehow I seem to get all the credit, so I would like to share some of that credit with them. I should also like to thank reporter Charlotte Neal for her marvellous coverage of the event in the Hampshire Chronicle. And that was Phil Yates of Tower Street, Winchester.
Angela Seeley writes, what is their vision for our community? Sir, as ever, your paper last week had several interesting items, which, if linked together, pose some very important questions about the nature of the city and community of Winchester in the future. You report that a lack of carers is adding to the A&E crisis, and that one major problem in the Winchester area is that few people are willing to work as carers. Could this be because the work is not valued? Carers are poorly paid, on the minimum wage, and therefore cannot afford to live in Winchester, where a very high income is required to buy or rent a house. The vast majority of existing houses and flats and those proposed to be built are not affordable to anyone earning the average wage of £28,000. Winchester also needs to have a wide range of shops to cater for the less well-off families as well as the wealthy. To focus only on provision of housing and retail for the wealthy will have huge implications for the makeup, capability and sustainability of the population of Winchester in the future. What are the longer-term implications of too few carers in the city and community as we all get older and may need care? Who then will provide this care and other essential services? Will these services become unavailable? Can civic leaders in our city demonstrate how they will ensure Winchester has a balanced and diverse community in the coming decades, where people can both live and work together to provide a wide range of caring and essential services? What is their vision for the future community of Winchester? Angela Seeley, Park Road, Winchester.
Keith Webb says, "Consult the locals, not the consultants." Sir, at last the city and county councils are stirring themselves over the future of the Winnell industrial estate and have appointed an international firm of consultants, Parsons Brinckerhoff, to prepare a 10-year plan for the area. As a first step, they have called a meeting at Base Point, but the database from which they invited participants with an interest in the area is so out of date as to be useless. The problem is that the Winnell trading estate is of virtually no interest to councillors, probably because businesses have no votes. When I learned of the meeting, it was through the press. I own four industrial premises in Winnell, with some 30 business tenants, have worked in Winnell since 1959 and lived in the ward for over 50 years. I have written countless letters to the press about a variety of topics, most notably Eastern Lane traffic problems, yet the best that those organising the meeting could do from the data supplied by the council was write to me at 32 Andover Road, a letter I didn't receive. I sold my business, Webb's Frozen Foods, in Andover Road well over 30 years ago. I have always suspected that our councillors, few of whom live in Winchester, do not read this letters page because they never respond to the points I make. Someone must notice, because finally, after many years, something, but not all I suggested, has been done about Eastern Lane traffic. I still await a slip road onto the A34 northbound. Why, may we ask, has a big international firm with offices in Australia, Hong Kong, the Gulf and North America been commissioned at no doubt huge expense when many local businessmen would probably be happy to meet on a regular basis to make suggestions? Those who live and work in Winnell are better able to sort out problems than a no doubt junior consultant from a huge international firm. Keith Webb, Quarry Road, Winchester.
Thank you. Now, if you'd like to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can ring them on 01962 860836. That is 01962 860836. Or you can email them on news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. And you can also, of course, write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Now, the Hampshire Chronicle has a regular feature, Your Say, which asks four members of the public on this week's topic. And this week it is, what do you think of the idea of creating babies using DNA from three people? Marco.
Moira Lee, aged 67, retired of Cheriton Road Full Flood, said, I'm torn. I have a genetic eye condition, which I could only get through both parents. But when we start meddling with genes and things, we're going to create a super race.
Roy Evans, 84, retired of Sarum Road, said, I think it's a really good idea because it protects diseases from being transferred from one person to another child. I know the church are a little bit sceptical at the moment. They're not opposed to it, though.
Hayley Merrington, 40, beauty consultant of Stockbridge Road, said, it's something that's going to happen in the future. I'm 40, and if I want kids, they've got a high risk of having Down syndrome. People that are older could maybe have kids without worrying.
Ross Darman, 27, restaurant manager of Rowlings Road Week, said, I'm not religious, so I don't have any issue with it. Those people are very entitled to do it with their own children, but they shouldn't force other people to make the same decision.
The Hampshire Chronicle also has an occasional item called Question and Answer, in which they ask a local person about their local area. This week it is the turn of Trevor Nutbeam, a cleaner from Walpole Road, Stanmore. Now, I'll ask the questions and John will give Trevor's responses. So, what is your favourite restaurant or cafe?
Probably Zizzy's. It's a friendly atmosphere and good food.
Favourite pub or bar?
Alfie's. It's good fun and it's good evenings in the summer.
Favourite shop?
River Island for the range of stuff. The independent shops are all right. There's just not much here.
Favourite view?
Probably St Giles Hill. You can see the whole of Winchester. I go up there in summer.
Who or what is Winchester's biggest icon?
The history. It's the old capital, so everyone flocks here to see it.
And what's Winchester's best-kept secret?
You've got the Dean, Garnier Garden. It's hidden behind the cathedral, so it's small. It's nice and quiet.
And what is the best thing about Winchester?
All the hustle and bustle of markets and what's going on.
And the worst?
Buses. They're never on time. They're just awful.
If there was one thing that you could change about the city, what would it be?
More men's shops. It's all women's shops up here. In some ways, Silver Hill might bring what I want.
And could you describe Winchester in a sentence?
Oh, that's easy. A charming little town with lots to do and see.
Thank you. Now we'll go on to historical items. And we'll start, please, with Margot from 25 years ago.
February the 2nd, 1990. Jock and Eve call time on King Alfred. Regulars at Winchester's King Alfred pub are mourning the end of an era with the retirement of the landlord and landlady Jock and Eve Christie. They have run the pub in Saxon Road, Hyde, for the last 20 years and are thought to be the longest-serving publicans in the city. For many years, the King Alfred has enjoyed a reputation as one of the best traditional neighbourhood pubs in Winchester.
Hampshire, this is, by the way, 25 years ago also, Hampshire County Council will not escape the brunt of the new business rates, which could cost the authority an extra £2, or rather £2 million, a year. Some hair-raising figures were put before County's Land Subcommittee last week, which in three instances ran into five-figure percentage increases. The council has been basing its assessments on 15-year-old figures, and the highest rise was with Sparsholt Junior and Infant School. Under the old figures, its rateable value came out as £169, but the new put it at £6,900, a staggering 3,983% increase.
And from 50 years ago, please, Eileen.
50 years ago, February the 6th, 1965, Waltham Chase, 16 bungalows. Although an area of land at Waltham Chase would eventually be developed, because it was not included in the proposed Greenbelt, the Hampshire Planning Authority said at an inquiry in Bishop's Waltham they were not prepared to release it for development yet. The inquiry was into an appeal by Mr. J. E. Serbert of Bishop's Waltham against a refusal to allow him to build 16 semi bungalows on land at Bull Lane, Waltham Chase. The objections to the development were that although the land was in the area excluded from the Greenbelt, it was part of a programme over a period of 20 years.
Again, 50 years ago. I'd like you to try and spot an editorial error in this one. I think it's going to be fairly clear to you, but it is as printed. And it's about chickens and eggs again. A serious problems are at present facing the poultry industry, as several months of overproduction have led to diminishing margins and many egg producers are going out of business. But a reassurance that the pendulum was at last beginning to swing the other way was given by Mr. Cyril Thornber, Managing Director of Messrs. Thornber Brothers, the biggest producers of laying poultry in the world. Now listen carefully, here it comes. When he spoke to a large gathering of poultry in the world... See, they've got it here. And then there's a correction. They go on to say, when he spoke to a large gathering of poultry farmers in the world at a conference in Winchester Guildhall on Tuesday.
Thank you. 100 years ago, please, Margot.
February the 6th, 1915. Aylesbury. Tenants shoot. For many years, the esteemed master of the Hambledon Hounds and owner of the excellent Marwell Covers has invited the tenant farmers and others to a day shooting. This year was no exception to the rule, although the invitations were somewhat restricted. On Monday, in ideal weather, those especially favoured met to partake of the one long-looked-for day sport of the year.
And this is from 100 years ago as well, in fact, February the 6th, 1915. There is not a great deal that is new to report locally with reference to military arrangements. There are still some 3,000 men of one of the Lancashire units of Kitchener's army billeted mostly in public halls and buildings, some of the officers being at private houses. There are, in addition, territorials, yeomanry and infantry, so that Winchester is far from being denuded of troops. All the men are behaving splendidly. And although Lancashire lads are proverbially on the rough side, those now in Winchester are proving it's not so true of the lads of every part of that famous county.
And 200 years ago, please, Eileen.
On February the 6th, 1815, fires destroyed cloth manufacturer. Between 4 and 5 o'clock yesterday morning, a dreadful fire broke out in a clothes factory of Mr. Lamphere at Cullum Engineers. Engineers were immediately procured, but from want of practice, they did little or no service. And in a short time, the buildings with the large quantity of wood and implements were totally destroyed. A fire broke out at about 8 o'clock on Sunday evening at a house in Frog Lane, Trowbridge, which consumed the roof of the same with that of a house adjoining. No other material damage was done. It was supposed to have originated from some sparks from a chimney alighting on the thatch.
Again, February the 6th, 1815. At a meeting of the inhabitants of Salisbury, a petition for the abandonment of the property tax after the 5th of April was carried by acclamation. A numerous meeting of the County of Berks took place at Reading to petition against the renewal of the property tax. The petition and resolutions were voted unanimously.
Thank you. Christian comment this week is written by Roland Ream and is read, please, by Margot.
And Roland Ream calls his piece of writing Called to Make Space for Peace. In Winchester Cathedral, a rabbi and an imam shook hands at the end of the annual Space for Peace event. Many different choirs and soloists came together to create a rich and complex harmony of sounds, as well as being dispersed around the cathedral to perform separately. Space for Peace is masterminded by the University of Winchester's Foundation Music Team, under the inspirational leadership of Professor June Boyce Tillman. The event marks Holocaust Memorial Day, which this year has been offset by stories of rising anti-Semitism and hate against Muslim across Europe. And even as close to home as Chandler's Ford, police had to step in to prevent violence at an EDL protest against Muslims building a community centre, seen by them as a sign of the Islamization of our country. It is time for the majority to speak. This majority comprises people of all religions and none, ordinary folk who feel increasingly compelled to do something about the creeping prejudice they see on the media. They are prepared to stand against it and be counted. A good example of what can be done comes from Basingstoke, where recently people of different faiths met to share a meal and friendship. The weapons against prejudice that the majority have to hand are the ordinary ways in which every human relationship is built, spending time together and sharing food. There are challenges in meeting across different religions and cultures, one of course being what food to eat. Certainly anyone who follows the example of Jesus will be eager to break bread, or its equivalent, with strangers and those feared and despised, knowing how little he cared for what others thought of the company he kept. Another sturdy weapon is doing good together. The Jewish community in Winchester celebrate Mitzvah Day by planting spring bulbs in the city mill garden and inviting others to join them. With some imagination and effort, not only can relationships be cultivated, but also the sense of making a positive and lasting difference to the locality. Whatever the benefits to the community and to the reputation of religious groups, the biggest motivator remains the sense that something must be done to stand squarely against evil. This imperative is shared by prophets of every religious tradition, with their insistent call to rise up and do what is right in God's sight.
Thank you. Chronicle comment concerns the item about the development of Chesil Street surface car park. It's headed, "A Price the City Simply Has to Pay," and it's read by John, please.
Yes, and it says this: "Today, the Winchester Planning Committee decides the proposal for extra care homes on Chesil Street. The 52 homes for people aged over 55 would replace the open-air public car park. It would be no surprise if the meeting gets heated as passions are running high. Around 100 people turning out on a chilly Sunday morning for the Chronicle photographer shows how strongly people feel. 'Right idea, wrong place,' is their slogan. The Chesil Street issue, along with the future of River Park, are cited as examples of the schism between local government and electors, between bodies trying to foster modern public services and the protest groups protecting their patch. But to be realistic, the committee is likely to agree with their officer's recommendation to approve the plans. Winchester is getting older, with the number of people aged over 85 years of age increasing by a quarter since 2001. These people are not going away, and extra care schemes will be increasingly important. The development at Chesil Street may not be quite the best place, but it is certainly not the wrong place. This development is the price Winchester simply has to pay in the 21st century."
Thank you. Now, Joanna Lewis writes about the dread of a plastic orange planning notice, and it's read today by Roz.
Yes, working at home has its disadvantages. I was still in pyjamas having breakfast when the view I had enjoyed for 5 years, a canopy of typically Hampshire trees, disappeared before I could say snap, crackle or pop. Yes, reader, gone. By the time I got dressed, most of the majestic silver birch had been fed into a wood chipper, so I was too late to throw myself into the path of the chainsaw. Now, apart from the sad stump, all that remains is probably at the bottom of a hamster cage. Other neighbours had also watched in disbelief, some in tears. The tree became a symbol of bigger threats to our local heritage, and how it happened was as confusing as quantum physics. Some of us need the equivalent of a papal dispensation to trim a dumpy beech. Yet the willowy Jerry Hall of our hillside got the chop and has never been replaced. Here's an idea for Professor Brian Cox's next series, Mysteries of the Universe, Part 2, The Tree Protection Order. The birch was partly the victim of disease, mostly garden-grabbing blight. For soon after, the one thing appeared that those of us of a certain age dread seeing, even more than a sideways photograph of ourselves in January. An orange plastic planning application notice. In this case, for a three-storey dwelling shoehorned into a front garden in a semi-rural area surrounded by bungalows. A contemporary design on the cheap to maximise profit. That'll be something that looks like a Norwegian urinal then. Winchester has become a battleground. Virtually everyone I know is fighting a campaign to get the council to exercise some control over outside developers. After tea and cake, we also founded our own campaign. Community activism becomes a chance to meet neighbours you've only ever driven past or, in my driving, nearly driven over. But it's not just an opportunity to say sorry. You catch up with gossip and the brilliant achievements of sons and daughters. I've also discovered that I'm rubbish at campaigning. The name I suggested, the Save Heritage Action Group, produced the unfortunate acronym SHAG. I'm sorry. I've got a new respect for councillors and politicians who do door-to-door canvassing. I'd rather eat my own kidney. But you learn grown-up stuff too, like your rights, how to object without sounding nuts, and how local government works. We'd all rather not have to know this, of course. Nevertheless, 60 objection letters were submitted. People generally are fed up with the way Winchester is a magnet for certain kinds of developers because they feel confident they can bend the regulations for fast, easy profits. Our neighbourhood design statement states no three-storey buildings, nothing that is out of context with local character, nothing that will cause distress or loss of privacy. This week, we find out if democracy and common sense win. As they say, in the best political tradition, our campaign will go on and our lost birch will have a silver lining.
Now, you probably know that Belgarum has an alternative look at the news, and the first item in this is the earthquake brings out the humorous spirit. It may be pushing it a bit to say Winchester evoked the Dunkirk spirit after the earthquake last week. Thousands of houses shook, although there were no reports of serious damage. But there was no shortage of self-deprecating humour. Sarah Knight posted a photo about the devastation in her back garden in the Winchester Pix Facebook page. It was captioned, "We will rebuild." And there's a copy of the photograph there, and it shows her plastic garden furniture, and one of the chairs had fallen over. Now, Eileen will read the second item of Belgarum, which is about the snowman.
Yes, the little snow that put a smile on everybody's face. Revelation of the week for Belgarum was the latest artistic talent lurking amongst security staff at Winchester's Crown Court. When the city received a light dusting of the white stuff earlier in the week, Someone on an early shift created a teeny-weeny snowman on the top of the barrier at the entrance to the underground car park. The creation may have only measured 4 inches from head to toe, but it was perfection complete, with diddy stick arms and a face. We can't help thinking that it must have made incoming jurists pause and chuckle. As the morning wore on, snow elsewhere soon melted in the weak January sun. But the security snowman was made of sterner stuff and survived until lunchtime. A brief existence, but certainly a memorable one by a snowman's standards.
Excellent. Right, lighting up times, goodness me. On Friday the 6th of February, the sun rose at 7:35 a.m. and set again at 5:04 p.m. While on Wednesday the 11th of February, the lighting up time will end on 7:26 a.m. and begin again on 5:13 p.m. You'd like to know about some of the activities which might be of interest to you taking place in the next week or so. Salisbury Playhouse is presenting 84 Charing Cross Road by James Ruse Evans. This is a charming play based on Helen Heff's book about the 20-year correspondence between herself and Frank Dole, the chief dyer for Marks & Co., antiquarian booksellers located in the eponymous address in London. This production is particularly interesting because it is directed by James Ruse Evans, who wrote the play and directed the original production at Salisbury Playhouse in 1981, which went on to huge success in the West End and on Broadway. Now on to slightly more mundane things. Winchester Street Market on Sunday the 8th of February features the antiques and retro artworks. On February the 11th, that's Wednesday, on Wednesday the 11th of February at the John Stripe Building in the University of Winchester, there's a lecture by Tom Yendall on the world of the Worldwide Association of Mouth and Foot Painting Artists. Now, Tom was born in Winchester without arms due to the drug thalidomide. This is a 6 o'clock for a 6:30 start. On Monday the 23rd of February, there's a free lecture in the cafe area of Winchester Discovery Centre on the Battle of Agincourt, given by Professor Anne Curry. And the last item is actually an item very clear to our guest reader's heart, Madam Mayor. It is a lecture given by the Mayor, Councillor Eileen Berry, called My Life with Poetry. It'll take place in Abbey House on Wednesday the 4th of March from 10:30 to 12:30. The tickets will be £8, including coffee, and this is being presented as part of the Mayor's fundraising activities during her year of office, and I'm sure that will be fascinating to us all. Well, those were the regular features chosen for you this week. Now let's have a look at those items of general news, starting with Margot, please.
Guide dogs need volunteer walkers. People in Hampshire have the chance to be part of these adorable puppies' lives. Wherever these happy balls of fur wander, they got a chorus of ahs, but they desperately need volunteers to take them for walks. They are destined to help partially sighted and blind people as guide dogs. Now, the Guide Dogs organisation is appealing for help to find puppy walkers in Winchester, East Lee, Southampton and the New Forest. It is a crucial volunteering role which prepares the dogs for their working life by familiarising them with different environments like the home, towns and public transport. Myra Pritchard is a puppy walker and she said, "Puppy walking is an incredibly fulfilling and worthwhile voluntary role, despite it being a huge commitment. I enjoy every day, and as a plus, get to be outside and exercising too. I would encourage anyone who who has the time and interest to become involved.
Okay.
Volunteer puppy walkers are also asked to provide full-time care and education for a puppy from 7 weeks of age until they are between 12 and 14 months old. Volunteers also have to meet certain requirements and follow procedure, as well as meet regularly with a supervisor who looks at the puppy's progress. After completing their time with a puppy walker, guide dog puppies move on to a training school and begin their formal guide dog training. Myra added, "One of the greatest benefits of being a puppy walker is meeting all the wonderful people involved in the charity. I have learned lots of new skills and also taken up the opportunity to be involved with other voluntary roles, such as public speaking and fundraising. It has made such an amazing difference to my life. It really is a wonderful thing to do."
Is the smart money still on school uniforms? Does it really matter what pupils wear to school? The Chronicle takes a look at the great school uniform debate in this article. Top buttons done up at all times, ties to be worn with six stripes showing, and girls banned from wearing trousers. These are some of the rules at King's School in Winchester, the comprehensive, famously local for its strict uniform policy. But do uniforms make better schools? Do smarter pupils learn more? Outside the school gate, the trend is in the opposite direction. Even David Cameron is often seen without a tie and top button undone. And he went to Eton with starched collars, striped trousers and tails. Does school uniform serve any purpose at all? Today, Winchester's three excellent comprehensive have very different rules. King's head teacher, Matthew Leeming, says it's too simplistic to say uniforms improve schools. He said, "A lot depends on the context and culture. There are very successful schools all over the world with no school uniforms. In the UK, given our history and culture, there is an association between school uniforms and high achievement. It seems to me the strongest reason for school uniform is that it takes pressure off children. They don't have to decide what to wear on a daily basis. The choice is made for them. This avoids a fashion show with self-conscious teenagers judging each other by the clothes they wear. I am a strong advocate of school uniforms mainly for that reason," said Mr. Leeming, who said there was also a reputational aspect, as smartly dressed pupils were more likely to create a favourable impression on outsiders. And there is a photograph here of the headmaster, or head teacher, as he's called strictly, Mr. Matthew Leeming, in a picture with the head boy and the head girl. And all I can say is, my goodness me, they are so smart. words fail me.
Satcha and Strudel. It seems to be the name of either a restaurant, cafe, or an area where pastries are produced. It's not every day you see a trained pastry chef collaborate with an aircraft engineer, but that's exactly what Antonia Goodwin Goodwart and her husband Peter have done to open a new niche business selling baked goods near Winchester. The Twyford-based duo have launched Satcha and Strudel, a Venetian-styled patisserie in Shawford Road. Inspired by her love of specialist pastries, Mrs. Goodwin, 32, said it was something that she always wanted to do, hoping that she could bring something a little different to Shawford villages.
This is entitled "Renewed Grief as Late Boyfriend's Gift is Stolen." A grieving Eastleigh woman has spoken of her sorrow after thieves stole a gift from her late boyfriend. Anna Chalk, holds dear anything that reminds her of P.C. Richard Phillips Schofield, but particularly the bike he gave her, given his love of the sport. The 27-year-old, who was with Richard for 6 years up until his death last year, was still struggling to come to terms with what happened when she found that thieves had got into the back garden and taken the prized possession from a locked shed. The bike was one of five stolen from sheds over 5 days in Pitmore Road, Albrook. A tearful Hannah told how Richard had bought her the bike as a gift in January 2012, so the couple, who lived in Hedge End, could go out on bike rides together, and Hannah could share his passion for the sport. The popular 33-year-old, who served at Bitton Police Station, came off his race bike in a British cycling event at the Mount Batten Centre Velodrome in March last year. He died 48 hours later. Hannah said she hoped her appeal would prick someone's conscience or alert someone who may have bought the blue Cannondale F700 bike to return it.
Broadcasting their support for good causes. A group of die-hard radio fans are set to take part in a mammoth broadcast to raise money for charities across the county. Winchester University students are certain to go radio gaga when they begin their 24-hour, week-long show to raise cash for good causes. The seven pairs from Sound Radio have been busy raising awareness of their ambitious plans to stay awake and entertaining for 24 hours straight, the first of which begins today, Friday. It is the first time the group have embarked on a challenge of this scale. They will be on air for a total of 168 hours, kicking off at 11 a.m. and continuing until 11 a.m. on Friday, February the 13th. Organiser Ryan McAndrew and Lauren Clark will begin their show to raise money for Enham Trust in Andover, and will be followed by Laura Harding and Mike Watkins for the Multiple Sclerosis Trust. Liam Rhodes and Rhys Goodfellow are raising for the Penguin Ward of Great Ormond Street Hospital. And Woody Reeves and Alastair Hodges are raising cash for the Youth Music Children's Charity. Winchester's own Naomi House will get a cash boost from Nardesia Parker and Hattie Waldron Session. Nordoff Robbins is the charity of choice for presenters Tali Atwa and Ellie Bennett. And then Catherine Tully and Frances Moffat will finish off to raise money for Cancer Research UK. Mr. McAndrew said, "I think students have got a bit of a bad reputation recently, so I wanted people to know there are students doing good, and most of what we're doing is to help local charities."
UK Trek to highlight plight of the homeless. A Winchester man is putting himself through the ultimate once-in-a-lifetime test and walking nearly 3,000 miles around the UK for charity. Paul Howard, 43, set off from Brighton Pier last weekend before taking the long, winding road along the south coast, up the east coast to Scotland, and finally back down through Wales and finishing at his home city of Winchester. While many people making fundraising efforts opt for a running race or mountain climbing challenge, Mr. Howard wanted to make sure his trek was so huge it could not be ignored. He said, "It's one of those things where I have just got to do it. It's a once-in-a-lifetime thing. I decided to do something, and I have a friend who works with homelessness charity Shelter who said, 'Why don't you raise money?' And it went from there. To me, homelessness is a huge situation, and in this country we have got a massive problem with rural homelessness. Far from staying in swanky hotels, Mr. Howard will be pulling his kit around in a trailer and sleeping in a tent every night. The inspiration came from a six-month stint working with Trinity Winchester, an organisation that aims to help homeless people and improve their futures. Mr. Howard hopes to raise at least £5,000 over the course of the trek for the shelter charity, which works to alleviate the distress and problems caused by homelessness and bad housing. He hopes to return to Winchester on August the 22nd, but admits the epic walk could take longer. He will take in more than 200 towns and cities and is most looking forward to visiting northern Scotland and particularly a trip up Ben Nevis.
Lionel honours area's top drama talents. It is a South Coast answer to the Academy Awards. A sold-out crowd of 500 thespians. Crew and theatre lovers gathered for the Hampshire's very own Oscars, the Curtain Call Awards. Special guests, legendary entertainer Lionel Blair, opened the golden envelope to reveal the winners in each of the 37 categories. SJ Theatre Productions scooped the coveted Production of the Year award for their version of the musical comedy Le Cage Follies, described by the judges as deeply touching and particularly memorable.
Experts to study contents of the cathedral's tombs. Remains of Saxon and Norman kings believed to be interred. Winchester Cathedral has announced plans to lift the lids of the historic mortuary chests. The tomb's contents, believed to be the remains of Saxon and early Norman kings, will be assessed in the coming weeks. They are also thought to contain three bishops, as well as other artefacts. The Dean of Winchester, the Very Reverend James Atwell, said, "This is an exciting moment for the cathedral, when we seemed poised to discover that history has indeed safeguarded the mortal remains of some of the early Saxon kings who became first monarchs of a united England. Winchester holds the secrets of the birth of the English nation, and it does seem that some of those secrets are about to be revealed as future research continues. The presence of the bones in the cathedral, where they would have been placed near the high altar and the relics of St. Swithin, remind us just how significant the inspiration of the Christian faith was for the foundation of our national life. The chests themselves, which rest in the Lady Chapel, have been assessed as part of the cathedral's conservation works. It forms part of a new three-part exhibition coming to the cathedral in the next few weeks, entitled Kings and Scribes, The Birth of a Nation. The exhibit, which will be in the south transept, will also feature the 12th century Winchester Bible. The project director, as is the cathedral's receiver general, Canon Annabel Boys. She said, "This welcome news marks a further stage towards achieving our aspirations to tell the stories of people who have inspired and been inspired by the cathedral. Since the 16th century, there have been several inspections, but recent developments in forensic archaeological study mean the findings can be radiocarbon dated to more accurately confirm the date of remains. Experts believe those interred include Canute, King of England, Denmark and Norway, his Queen Emma of Normandy, and their son Harthacnut." Canute.
Tom is relishing Pilgrim's Challenge. We're pushed for time, but the new head of the Pilgrim School wants to show me his favourite view. After bounding up some stairs and nipping through a door, Tom Burden presents me with the most English of vistas. Winchester's medieval cathedral, the Dean's centuries-old garden, and a mass of welly-booted boys. The pre-prep pupils are doing what diminutive males the world over relish, glooping in mud, waving sticks, hanging off climbing frames, and generally being messy. Yet there's a good chance that lurking amongst these dirt-spattered boys is a future business board director or revered classical musician. For many decades, Pilgrims has enjoyed a reputation for intellectual excellence, as well as providing two top-flight treble choirs, one for the cathedral and one for Winchester College's chapel.
Woman pleads guilty to child porn charges. A young Alsford woman has pleaded guilty to a string of serious pornography charges. The trial of Amy Hickson of Gray's Farm Close, New Cheriton, was due to begin on Monday at Winchester Crown Court, but just before a jury was sworn in, the 20-year-old suddenly admitted 13 charges involving 1,129 images. These comprised 8 counts of making an indecent photograph or pseudo-photograph of a child, 2 of possessing extreme pornographic images involving animals, and 2 of possessing prohibited images of children. 2 of the counts referred to over 500 images each. All the offences occurred between May 2012 and February 2013. Hickson spoke only to confirm her name and to quietly say guilty to each of the charges as they were read out to her. Some of the images confiscated by police fell into Category A as being among the most extreme forms of pornography available on the internet. The photographs involving animals were described in court as being grossly offensive, disgusting, or otherwise of obscene character. An application has been made to the court for Hickson's computer to be destroyed. Her barrister, Andrew Turton, said, "She's of good character. She's now 20 but was 17 at the time these offences were committed." Deferring sentence until March the 6th, Judge Susan Evans QC told Hickson, "You will receive some credit for the guilty pleas you have entered today. I'm not going to say how much at this stage. I'm going to adjourn this case for a pre-sentence report. It's no indication of how you are going to be dealt with. All options will be open to the court." Hickson was given conditional bail.
Park-and-ride buses fill gaps left by cutbacks. Winchester's park-and-ride buses are filling some gaps created by cutbacks to evening services. Hampshire County Council has cut funding for several buses, including the number 5 to Badger's Farm, number 1 to Stanmore, which no longer run after 8 p.m. Now the City Council has asked Stagecoach to get its park and ride buses to stop at 5 extra places along Romsey Road and Badger's Farm Road after 8 p.m. The buses at 8:10 p.m. and 8:35 p.m. from the railway station will stop on request at Romsey Road, at the police headquarters, the hospital, Queen's Road, Sleepers Hill, Battery Hill, and at the Badger's Farm Road, Oliver's Battery Road stops. The 8 p.m. and the 8:25 p.m. from South Winchester Park and Ride will stop on request at Badger's Farm Road, Oliver's Battery Road South, and then on Romsey Road at Battery Hill, Sleepers Hill, Queen's Road, the hospital, police headquarters, the railway station on the way back to the Broadway, and on to St Catherine's Park and Ride. The services started on Monday. Councillor Mike Southgate, the city's councillor's portfolio holder for communications and transport, said, "These services will help Stanmore and Badger's Farm residents to get into town or back home after 8 p.m. We have been working with bus operators to provide some form of additional evening bus services. Both Stagecoach 66, the Blue Star, one continue to provide late evening services to and from Stanmore and St Cross respectively. This proposal allows us to provide some additional services at no extra cost, although they will only stop on main roads. The evening disruption to the popular park and ride services should be minimal. We are continue to discuss options with operators for other parts of Winchester. The council will poster at town bus stops to advertise the new services and promote them on social media. Passengers will need a valid park and ride ticket, stagecoach pass or concessionary pass, or else they will pay the standard commercial fare.
Concern over high rate of teenage smokers. School children in Hampshire are being surveyed over their smoking habits in a bid to cut the number of teenagers taking up the habit. Health bosses in the county have launched a number of projects to help tackle the problem of young smokers after new figures showed Hampshire had a higher than average number of 15-year-olds who smoke. A report showed that there is a 14% smoking rate amongst 15-year-olds in Hampshire and a 15% smoking rate in Southampton, both above the national average of 12.7%. Commissioned by Public Health England, PHE, and NICE, the figures are estimates of youth smoking rates for every area in England, based on factors known to predict young people smoking. In Hampshire, work has already been commissioned to look at why other authorities are better at tackling the problem.
I have here an article about the development of Barton Farm. And there is a drawing of an artist's impression of the first phase of the development, showing several hundreds of houses being built, and beneath it the current appearance of the area, open green fields with lovely trees bordering those fields. And the article says, "This is what the first phase of the controversial Barton Farm development near Winchester will look like. After debates and demonstrations stretching back nearly 20 years, the building work on the 2,000-home scheme is due to start this April. The artist's impression shows the initial phase of house building, which developer Carla Holmes is calling King's Barton. The first stage is for 223 homes. Archaeological work has already begun at the site off Landover Road, and construction has started on building one of the main junctions onto the site, which will eventually carry the diverted Andover Road. The new junction near Wellhouse Lane is due to be completed next month. Overall, 800 of the homes, that's 40% of them, will be affordable and available only to those on Winchester City Council's housing register. There will also be a new primary school, parks and a village green, shops, community centre, GP surgery and park and ride. Carla is also involved with Clarendon Court on nearby Park Road, the restoration of an Edwardian home into six luxury apartments. It will also include two more apartments, a four-bedroom detached house and a five-bedroom detached home." Graham Cunningham, Regional Managing Director for Carla Holmes, said, "We are excited about the upcoming 12 months for Carla Holmes in Winchester. King's Barton will not only provide much-needed homes, but will also generate significant investment in local facilities and services, while Clarendon Court will bring a historic Winchester home back to its former glory. Barton Farm is the biggest single housing development in the city since Badger Farm in the 70s and 80s. The absence of greenfield development over the past 30 years led to intensive infill development within the city boundaries."
Floating observatory unveiled for art lovers and artists. A unique workspace and community project has launched in Winchester. The Floating Observatory will give art lovers the opportunity to be a fly on the wall and see how each artist uses the space to gather their thoughts and inspirations. It will spend its first 6 months in the grounds of Winchester Science Centre and Planetarium at Morne Hill, where it was officially launched last Friday. It will move to Lymington in July. The observatory was developed by Space Placemaking and Urban Design, that's SPUD, I suppose we could call that SPUD, which was also responsible for the award-winning Stephen Turner's Exbury Egg Project, a sustainable art workspace that floated in the River Bewley. Six artists were chosen from 100 applications and each will spend 2 months using the observatory. Artist Simon Ryder, visual artist and filmmaker Sean Harris, and multidisciplinary artist Isabella Martin have been picked for the Winchester leg. The launch was attended by schoolchildren and community groups, and the organisers hope to work more closely with them with the Learning and Engagement Programme. Principal Associate at SPUD, Phil Smith, said, "What a fantastic start to 2015 to bring the observatory to life in Winchester. We are confident that the project will be well received and that the selected artists will produce a fascinating variety of work that explores the observatory and its locations, offering a wide range of ideas and opportunities for the public to see artists at work and gain some new perspectives on familiar places. Art is something that shouldn't be tucked away and hidden, and we are hopeful that the observatory will stimulate both young and old minds to visit more exhibitions and performances and to be inspired by the world around us." And this piece is accompanied by a photograph of six artists, the curator, a chap called Phil Smith, and somebody who is sitting right next to me in the studio at the moment, the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Eileen Berry.
Bridge plans lead to a rat run fears at Headbourne Worthy. Before I go on, there's a photograph leading this article of eight people and a King Charles Spaniel, and they're all lined up with a placard each which reads, "Keep huge lorry off Down Farm Lane, don't raise the bridge height." And it goes on. Residents and councillors say they fear their village will become a rat run for lorries after a plan to revamp a railway bridge was announced. Network Rail wants to increase the height of the bridge in Down Farm Lane in Headbourne Worthy by around 3 feet, which villagers say will allow through lorries travelling to nearby Barton Farm. The development will see around 2,000 homes built on the land off Andover Road. Beavis Clarksmith, a resident of London Road in Headbourne Worthy, said the traffic is already bad. "I'm terrified that it will lead to an increase in heavy traffic," he said. "If this bridge was not there, there would be no restriction on the speed of the traffic, and raising it will obviously mean it's open to large vehicles. It is a concern for everybody in the village." At a demonstration last Friday, around a dozen residents voiced their concerns for the plans, including prospective Lib Dem MP for Winchester and Chandler's Ford, Jackie Porter. She says, "We believe this is going to put people's road safety at risk. Carla Holmes, Barton Farm developer, is already using Well House Lane as an unofficial route by driving across the grass verge. And I think that shows how vigilant we as a community have got to be." Parish Councillor Claire Duncan said she thinks the height increase will destroy the integrity of the village. Winchester City Councillor Jane Rutter, who was also at the demonstration, said there is going to be a drop-in event to discuss the issue at the church rooms in London Road, on Friday, February the 20th, from 3 p.m. until 8 p.m. Network Rail had not responded to the Chronicle's request to comment at the time of going to press.
More fines for school truants. More fines are set to be issued to parents who allow their children to skip school in a tough new crackdown in Hampshire's schools. County education bosses have approved a new set of rules which will allow head teachers to request the authority issues fines of £60 to parents who flout the new guidelines. Previously, Hampshire has adopted a more lenient approach to parents who allow their children to miss school during term time, leading to a lower level of fines being issued. However, Recent truancy figures show that unauthorised absences across county schools are on the rise, prompting education chiefs to take action.
Check presentation, a poignant moment. A cancer charity has been boosted by the refurbishment of a Winchester office block. Gentle Consulting and their team of contractors have been raising money for Macmillan Cancer Support whilst working on Avalon House on Chesil Street for the last 7 months. Fundraising over the duration of the seven-month project included the site management team providing over 600 hot breakfast baguettes to the workforce, close to 1,000 cans of fizzy drinks, and 500 chocolate bars from the site tuck shop. Additional donations from individuals, contractors, and consultants resulted in a contribution of 1,500, bringing the total raised by Gentle Consulting site projects in recent years to more than £20,000. The cheque was presented last Thursday. The occasion was particularly poignant as Gentle Consulting will be closing doors this week after more than 25 years due to the company owner's ill health. Alice Dewsnap-Smith, fundraising manager for Macmillan, said, "A huge thank you to everyone at Gentle Consulting Limited and their team of contractors for choosing to support Macmillan. We are so grateful that everyone involved with the Avalon House refurbishment have joined Team Macmillan and are helping us to ensure that no one will face cancer alone. The building is set to open shortly as a new NHS Health and Wellbeing Centre, providing a base for community nurses, health visitors, mental health teams and children's services."
Well, thank you, everyone. That concludes the Hampshire Chronicle extracts for this week. A reminder that Irene Dowding is the person to call if you have any problems with your recording. Her number is 01962 870370. 370. That is 01962 870370. You could give Irene a ring if you know of someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings. Many thanks to our editor, Barbara Chase, and to our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparations team. And a particular thanks to our Lady Mayor, Councillor Eileen Berry, for kindly joining us today. And thank you to our other readers, Margot.
Goodbye.
John.
Goodbye.
And Rosie said she'd left the room at the moment, but I'm sure she says goodbye as well. And from me, Peter, goodbye, and do have an enjoyable week. Now, when you've finished with this week's recording, would you please put the memory stick in the wallet and return it to us as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. So thank you, and until next week, goodbye.
Thank you, Peter. And